Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The results are not all in yet, but the results are clear. There's no way for the Democrats to spin their way out of what is an across-the-board drubbing. With power in the Senate going last night back to the GOP, Republicans now hold the White House, both houses of Congress, the majority of governorships. Here are the sounds of some of last night's closely watched Senate races.
Let me also thank a lot of Democrats, good Democrats for Dolan, unaffiliated, who helped me to win this seat. Thank you.
I understand the priorities of New Hampshire, education, the economy, and small business, and the environment. Work for 6 years to deliver real results on those priorities. And in the United States Senate, I'll do the same.
It is my hope that those who write of such things in years to come will say, Missouri's first woman to serve in the United States Senate from Missouri. That Missouri's first woman to serve in as the U.S. Senator, though she did not serve us long, she served us well.
We have gone through a very difficult election, the great tragedy, the loss of our senator, Senator Wellstone, and his family, and the families of others, and we all mourn for that. We all mourn, and we miss Paul Wellstone. We do. And we were on bended knee, and we were in prayer, and we mourned, and then we went back to work, and we've been working ever since. There is more work to be done, and there's more prayer to be done, because the results aren't in yet, so I want you just to kind of sit back and enjoy to celebrate. This is going to be a great Republican night, a great Republican victory.
Results are in. Norm Coleman, the winner in Minnesota. And now an unsheathing of that double-edged political sword, unified government. With the power of majority comes a load of responsibility to get things done. And the change frees up congressional Democrats to take a more aggressive opposition stance if they can just figure out that whole vision thing. Connection listeners, was your voice heard loud and clear last night? President Bush campaigned hard and got something of a mandate. What should he do with it? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And starting off this hour to analyze the results and to look forward to the 108th Congress is our own NPR senior national correspondent, Linda Wertheimer. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Dick.
A late night for you, and here you are again. Thanks for being with us.
Well, you're very welcome.
This bucks a pretty well-established trend when we see the White House gathering such support in a midterm election, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. In fact, I think it's the first time that that the party in power has recaptured one of the houses of Congress, the Senate. That hasn't happened since Reconstruction, I understand. But one of the things that that sort of limited the flexibility of campaigners to make much happen during the course of this particular campaign was the redistricting. I think that that if this midterm had happened in a year that was not right after the redistricting, that there might have been a bit of a different result. But, you know, you can't take it away from President Bush. President Bush was the driving force in this election, and this is a big victory.
Now, in your coverage last night, as you watched the results coming in, you made the point, as did other people on the program with you, that there was no national trend leading the Republicans past the Democrats. But in a way, it was the president and his popularity that became that national trend then.
You know what I think it was, as I sort of mulled it over last night while I was trying to go to sleep with all these races running through my head, was that this campaign was a sea of negativity. It was all sides, all parties, all candidates. There were tremendous numbers of ads. There were phone messages from political leaders. You picked up your phone and found Bill Clinton was talking to you on your message machine. Voters told us repeatedly that they were sick of it. And leaving aside the fact that the Republican Party and the Republican candidates were contributing to that flood, it seems to me that the only bright spot to be seen was the president. I mean, he was racing from state to state on a kind of barnstorming, baby-kissing, you know, balloon-raising, old-fashioned campaign. He was the only positive element in this whole race. The president, it seems to me, energized his base. He went out and he asked for help. And in the words of Tip O'Neill, that story he used to tell all the time, everybody likes to be asked. And I think, he was the one who got his base out. Everybody else's base was disgusted.
And whether you were stuck in the middle or a weak Democratic supporter, that disgust would lead you to that smiling face on the television, the one person who wasn't associated with all that, those negative ads.
I think that the great positive feeling that the president exuded, the fact that this took some courage, he took a risk. If what happened had not happened, then everyone would have said it was his fault, that he had no coattails, that he had no ability to share his popularity or his energy. But I think that what was very impressive is that the president did share. Now, we've seen another politician who was, who's always, by all accounts, despite everything that happened to him during his term, has remained popular, Bill Clinton, a master politician, but one who, like George Bush, appeared to have no coattails. He just never seemed to have the ability to share that personal popularity that he had. He lost the House. George Bush got the Senate back. I think you'd have to put it down to the president's simply going out there and just throwing himself at his Republican voters and saying, as he said repeatedly in city after city, go to the diner, go to your church, go to your school, get your family, get them all out there. And people responded. People did. Now, I don't know that this is true. And, of course, the pollsters that we're going to talk to later will probably be able to tell us. But I have the impression that the Republican turnout was just very strong in some states, as opposed to the other parties turning out.
You made the comparison, Linda, to Clinton. Now, my recollection was, of his consummate skill as a campaigner. I like the distinction between whether or not, one can provide the support for others and not. But, I mean, did just in simple miles logged and babies kissed, did Bush spend more time on this midterm election than even Clinton did while he was in office?
I think Bush raised more money, recruited more candidates, spent more time, kissed more babies, traveled more miles. I think this was a real tour de force for a midterm president. And I think you have to hand it to him. Now, when you look at it, did he get the big mandate? I think that clearly he did. And, when George Bush was elected with a House and Senate that were virtually tied the first time, he treated it like a major mandate. I'm sure he'll treat this one like a much more major mandate. But what you're looking at here, if you just look at the numbers, is not that impressive. I mean, this is the sort of freeze factor of redistricting. The Republicans had 222 Republicans in the House when they started. They have 226 now, with a few not called. The Republicans had 49 senators before this election. They have 51 now, and there are a couple outstanding races. 51 is, of course, a magic number, but it's not a huge number. I mean, we're not talking landslide here. This is not like the year when the Great Plains Democrats were swept out, or the year when every Republican who had Democrats in his district lost in the wake of Richard Nixon. This is not a giant sweep. This is incremental change, but it's very impressive that the president was able to do it in a midterm.
You mentioned, Linda, we've got a couple of pollsters standing by. Let's bring them in now. John McHenry's a Republican pollster, partner at Ayers McHenry & Associates, joining us from Montgomery, Alabama. And Stan Greenberg is a Democratic pollster, chairman and CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. He's joining us from New Haven, Connecticut. Stan Greenberg, first to you. What went wrong?
Well, first of all, I think Linda Wertheimer's analysis is mostly right, almost entirely on the mark. The president, I do think, performed very impressively in a year that the country was focused on the war on terrorism, right up to the very end, whether it was snipers or Iraq or Bali or North Korea. It was an environment in which he was had very high poll ratings. People wanted him to succeed and want him to succeed as president, but very much centered around, you know, around those cluster of issues. But I think it's important to underscore, because there's a real risk of over-interpreting. There's no doubt about the political earthquake. That is, the 51 is a magic number. Control of all the institutions of government, from Supreme Court through the Congress and the White House, is a very big moment historically. But the country is essentially divided down the middle between the parties. It was before the election. It is the day afterwards. But for a very uncivil ceremony in Minnesota and a few thousand votes in Missouri, we have a different show this morning.
What you're saying, Stan, is that under the circumstances, nothing the Democrats could have done or could have said would have changed this?
No. First of all, I do think that this was mostly about a very two things. One, a very important historical period where America was attacked and the president responded, you know, very effectively in mobilizing the country to it. But I also think it was an extraordinary politicization of this period, because, you know, all those negative ads that people talked about was, you know, were largely paid for by the president and his fundraising, and he was able to come out of this period not himself politicized, even though he was running a full out campaign domestically at the same time that he was mobilizing for war internationally, and it was a very impressive accomplishment.
Just stand by half a sec, if you would, Stan. I'd like to get John McHenry in before we go to our break. John, politicization and the president got away with it? Is that how you see it?
That's probably not exactly how I would have described it. There's no doubt that the president raised a great deal of money for Republican candidates, and that a lot of that money was spent on negative ads. The Senate race in Georgia is a great example of that. Especially with campaign finance law the way it existed up until yesterday, at least, if not going on a little bit further, means that you can't, if you're an outside party, you can't advocate for a candidate, which forces you into advertising in a negative fashion against somebody. But I think Linda hit the nail on the head when she said President Bush was the one shining positive face that you could see out there in a sea of doom and gloom. His sort of, you know, the leadership that he's provided, particularly since September 11th, in a positive way, rallying the country, and in the way that he's been very careful not to attack Democrats, especially not knowing how much he needed to work with them in the Congress coming up, but simply touting his Republicans and saying, you know, give me your support. We need to keep the tax cut. We need to work on a prescription drug benefit for seniors, and we need to push our domestic goals as well as
But that's no ringing endorsement of the Republican candidates, John, to say that they've all done it, you know, on the strength of Bush's popularity.
Oh, certainly Republican candidates have run their own races. But I think there's a great deal of credit to go to the president for helping energize the base. I think one of the problems that we saw in the South yesterday was, Democratic voters not being particularly motivated, in part because in some states that lean Republican in federal races, you had Democratic incumbents, and the anti-mood to throw out an incumbent wasn't there for the Democrats, and rather was there for the Republicans.
Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the midterm elections, a little bit about why it happened, and we hope to turn to what it means, what happens next. 1-800-423-TALK. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. For more on the implications of the Republican victory at the polls yesterday,
there's a smile on the face of the president this morning. Midterm elections have delivered nothing but good news to George W. Bush. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. As we take a look at what happened and what it means, we have with us on the program today John McHenry. He's a GOP pollster, partner at Ayers McHenry & Associates. Dan Greenberg is with us. He's a Democratic pollster and chairman and CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. And Linda Wertheimer is with us. She is NPR's senior national correspondent. Does this mean 13 election nights for you, Linda, or is this 12? I'm losing count.
I think it's 13.
I'm interested to look ahead, Linda, a little bit about what this means. But just before we do that, can you tell me if in your review of the governor's races or anything else that we can see in last night's results, anything else that jumps out at you that marks this midterm?
Well, it's so mixed. I think that's one of the reasons why I think it is right to say that each of these races was its own self, and you can't necessarily generalize, although of course we're all going to do that because the effect creates the reason to generalize. I was interested to see that three women who were running as Democrats in strongly Democratic states lost for governor. I was interested to see that in the southern states, where Democrats appear to be making gains and picking up some state houses and having some success in states where I thought for some time Republicans had a rock-solid hold, the Republicans have risen again. I was interested to see that the black turnout does not appear to have materialized to any great effect, certainly not in Georgia, probably not in Florida. Although my heart is breaking at the thought that we do not have those wonderfully detailed exit polls that tell us everything about who voted and why. I mean, I think not knowing the results at 8 o'clock in the evening is no big deal. But not knowing what happened or why people voted, I think that is a very sad thing. I was also interested to see that Latino voters in New Mexico, which is one of the race states I visited, came out and elected Bill Richardson. In Texas, they did not elect John Sanchez, and Richardson was not able to carry Democratic members of Congress in with him. Republicans won in two seats that were up for grabs there.
To Stan and to John, the lack of that more specific information we would have if the Voters News Service had not been unplugged. What are we missing?
What's striking to me is that the New York Times today, that the top right, the place reserved for America attacked, is on the headline is on the absence of the Voter News Service analysis for this election, which gives some sense of our sense of loss this year. What we're missing is exactly that, is knowing. I mean, for example, this, what's the mandate of this election? We're trying to surmise, and I think we're smart people, and we'll put something together, and we have some surveys with one of which we're doing for NPR, which we'll release, on Friday, that tries to get at that. But, what we're missing is what is the mandate about? If we had mobilization and high turnout of Republicans, which I think we did, particularly in the South, that says one thing. If this is about a specific set of issues, for example, tax cuts were mentioned before, and I'm sure the president will go forward on that, but I don't think there's any evidence that voters went to the polls asking for more tax cuts.
John?
Well, I think Stan's right that we'll sort of have to fill in the gaps with our own polling. We did a pre-election poll for Pharma over the course of the last weekend, so we can see a little bit of, what sort of the issues people had in mind going to the polls were, but there wasn't an overarching issue. In our survey, we had 28% of the people saying the economy was the most important issue affecting their congressional vote. 17% said terrorism and national security. 16% said healthcare in some iteration. But there's nothing in that data that says, people who said the economy was the most important thing voted a straight Democratic ticket. They favored Democrats by a few percentage points, but not overwhelmingly. Republicans won pretty convincingly among those who mentioned terrorism or national security.
Let me open it up to our calls here, John. We're at 1-800-423-8255. First to Buffalo, New York. John's on the line. Hi, John.
Hi, folks.
Thanks for calling.
I am a happy Republican today, as everyone can well imagine.
Congratulations.
You know, it's been quite a decade. I have to go back to a decade for the Democrats. You know, we are talking back in 1992. You had the presidency, the Congress, the Senate, and the Democrats continually talked about squandering opportunities. Talk about a squandered opportunity. In less than 10 years, they went from total majority to complete minority, and they're not going to like it. And that's when they're really a lot of fun.
So what's the read on this, that the Republicans have to act fast on this or they'll be accused of doing the same thing?
Well, no. I think the Democrats are going to work very earnestly to look out for the American business. I like an unfettered judiciary. You know, federal courts would be less congested. I mean, I like the whole concept. And, you know, it's really kind of peculiar. No one really talks about none of the pundits. None of the pundits got this right. It's fantastic. You know, what do we need you people for? You know, Linda, I'm sorry, Linda, no disrespect, but you're bemoaning the fact that the voter news service wasn't there. I thought it was great. You know, regardless of how it came out for me, I thought it was terrific to see how things came in just naturally. And that's the way it really was done, you know, 200 years ago, and that's what everyone seems to bemoan too. But I'd also like to make one point. You know, you talk about Max Cleland, everyone was outraged. You know, they're outraged because he does get a pity vote because he is sort of a handicapped, I don't know if that's the right word or not, a type of person. However, he did not vote for Homeland Security. And you got to understand something about Homeland Security when it comes to people who really know what's going on. Without Homeland Security and no threat of terrorist attack, we have no economic security. That's why it never gained any legs.
So, John, hit the ball here. Are you saying this was an election about supporting Bush and his support for Homeland Security?
Well, what I do believe, though, is that the Democrats have boxed themselves into too narrow of a corner. They are counting too much on Bill Clinton, the Walter Mondales, the Frank Lautenbergs. I personally think that Frank Lautenberg is going to have some medical problems, and he'll never survive a six-year term. He was trotted
well,
out.
Well, thanks for your prognosis on that, Dr. John.
You know, one of the things that this clearly does do now, though, is give the president a free hand. He has a free hand on Iraq, the economy, on deficits and what to do about them, on budgets and where to cut them. And as you said when you opened the show, Dick, this might be a two-edged sword for just the same reason that your caller was raising. The president now has nothing significant standing in his way to solve problems, do the things he wants to do, demonstrate that the ideas he has are workable ideas. And if it turns out that they don't work, you know, we have 2004 immediately out of us.
But he's got the ability to point to Democratic troublemakers in the Senate, excuse me, who would filibuster or prevent a 60% vote.
Yes, but they can't do it. They can't do it quite as easily as they might have been able to do it in a divided, if the Congress and the White House were divided.
John McHenry, do you think that the president has to move quickly to take advantage of what the voters have said here in light of what John's saying from Buffalo?
Well, I think that he has to move, certainly. It doesn't have to be that he gets his entire agenda passed in January. But he certainly, I mean, yes, this is a double-edged sword, but this is the double-edged sword everybody wants. There's no point in having the elections if you don't want to have full control. And this is a tremendous opportunity for him to ensure the tax cut remains in place, to, you know, get a cabinet-level Homeland Security department and push forward with his agenda. I think what we've seen in these elections is where he's made a difference. People have supported him, and he's got a great opportunity to get his agenda passed and stand on his record in 2004.
All right, John, thanks for your call, and now you can concentrate on Senator Clinton. 1-800-423-8255 to Lynn, Massachusetts. Now, Tina's joining us. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I just have a quick comment. I think that part of the reason why the Democrats did so poorly is because they didn't take a stand.
On what, Tina?
On Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was really hard for Democrats to differentiate between them and the Republicans. So, you know...
You mean for all voters to discern between the two parties?
Well, specifically the core Democratic base, the liberals and whatnot. So it just, you know, it just didn't motivate people to go out and vote because they just felt that, oh, well, it's the same old, so why bother, you know? And I think that the Democrats should focus on molding some, you know, new candidates instead of, like, always using Clinton, because it just seems that he's really not that popular anymore.
Did you vote, Tina?
Yeah, but I voted Green in Massachusetts.
Are you a Democrat by trade?
Used to be, but I'm leaning more towards the Green Party because I feel that, you know, they're really addressing issues that are important to me. And I just felt that, you know, I just kind of feel alienated by the Democratic Party right now.
Stan Greenberg, the accusation that you're Republican light instead of Democratic.
I agree with the caller. First of all, I do think the dynamic of the election derived from, you know, quite extraordinary period, and I'm not sure the Democrats could have fundamentally overturned that. But the Democrats, I think, on two issues, one, the economy, and two, the war, you know, did not articulate a position, which I think left most Democrats with not a real reason to go vote for Democrats.
Well, let's be specific. What should the Democrats have said about the war that they weren't saying?
Well, first of all, there's two things. I mean, by 2-1, we know in the House that the Democrats voted against authorizing the president at this time. And we also know in the Senate there was a very, even though there was, you know, a strong vote in favor in supporting the president, they were very expressive on their reservations about making sure there was allied and UN support. And I think the country, and certainly Democrats, I think the country was ready to hear that. I think that got lost, and the perception was that Democrats were not there speaking out. I think they would have in fact energized more. It was a responsible position. And I think the same thing's true on the budget. If you take the tax cut off the table, you walk away from that. Well, that's the heart of, you know, the George Bush approach to the economy. And if the Democrats are not articulating what's wrong with his approach to the economy and offering alternatives, then they're not going to get heard. They're not going to be relevant. And you're certainly not going to get the voters who inclined toward the Democrats to go to the polls in larger numbers. So I think it's very important for Democrats to be heard. And not, by the way, that's not necessarily a left-right position. One could have opposed the president's tax cut in order to achieve fiscal stability, to increase military spending and support for homeland security, as well as, you know, support Social Security and other social needs. So it wasn't an ideological position, but it was that's what the country needed at this point. But Democrats needed to speak up, but they took it off the table. So I think that's going to be one of the issues debated as we go forward.
Linda Wertheimer, I was listening to John Kerry praise Senator Ted Kennedy in his speech last night, and I'm wondering, what happened? What in your view is the shift that took the core of the Democratic Party away from the Kennedy Democrats and moved it into the Clinton Gore camp, and whether or not that's what we're looking at now in terms of what the party's paying for?
Well, you know, this is a very tough one to try to call, it seems to me, if you're a Democrat. On the one hand, the Kennedys and the Wellstones and the people who take very principled stands that are not necessarily shared by more than perhaps 25% of the voting population. We admire them for their stands, but do we vote for them? I think one of the reasons that we say that, when we say that we're looking at a tied country, is that the country is moving toward the middle and even when Republicans have had success in southern states, they've elected people who do not look like Jesse Helms, who do not look like Strom Thurmond in those states.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that in addition to, you know, sort of taking a more muscular stand on issues that are important, trying to articulate some kind of policy that sounds workable to people, that Democrats don't have the horses right now. I mean, looking at Bill Clinton, who is, you know, who is has, I think, a failed president in the end. Al Gore, who is mulling over his candidacy with every Democrat in the country, dreading the possibility that he might run again. Looking at some of these new people, John Edwards, the senator from South Carolina, looking at John Kerry, your senator from Massachusetts, I'm not sure that the Democrats have quite come up with the not George Bush leader yet. And I think a lot has to depend upon that. I mean, I think one of the reasons that midterm elections feel so unfocused and that this one took on focus is that the president threw himself into it. The Democrats didn't have anybody in a position to do that and didn't really have anybody who could do that. So, you know, I think what has to happen here is some uh, some consolidation of the party behind somebody, and it's very hard to see how that happens in just the short 2 years we have.
All right, Tina, thanks for your call. Our number's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's go to Dorchester, Massachusetts. Edward's on the line. Hi, Edward.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah.
This is Edward. I have a quick comment, a quick question, and then I have a solution to the voting problem.
Perfect.
So here you go. Here's my comment. I think now it's important that the president utilize his advantage in the House, the Senate, the judiciary, and the executive to help mold the world and the country into the Republican vision. And here's my question. What is that vision, and are the voters aware of that vision, or did they just vote for a D or an R?
Are you talking about the concept of empire that we've bandied about on the program before, Edward?
Not necessarily. I guess it's more of a question of what are people really voting for? Are they voting for the issues, or are they voting for a D or an R? And I guess also, is the media helping the voters to understand the issues? Like I looked through the Boston Globe and couldn't find the ballot issues anywhere. It's to me it seems ridiculous that people are not being informed about what they're voting for, and they're simply being told and waving banners, yes, I want to vote for a D, I want to vote for an R. But who are these people that we're voting for?
Edward, when we probably this time tomorrow we'll be talking about, you know, international reaction and what is the expression of the victory that the White House is going to be sending abroad. But John McHenry, what is the vision? What's the bumper sticker from this one?
Well, I think a lot of it is the agenda that President Bush has been touting, you know, keeping the tax cuts in place, securing the national security. I would say that in contrast to people not having enough information about the issues, that some people, I know my parents are up in New Hampshire, and they're fairly certain they got far too much information in the New Hampshire Senate race. People are almost bombarded to the point with information in some of these races that you know, they're sort of sticking to their partisan predilections going in, I guess.
Okay, but whisper in the president's ear. He's got to distill this into his sense of what it means for the country and the world. What would he say?
I think he would say that first and foremost, it's important that we solidify the national security, you know, have a Department of Homeland Security that's a cabinet-level position, and take a conservative view towards the economy. Keep the tax cuts in place. Let the market, you know, it looks like it may be starting to rebound, and that may have sapped some Democratic strength in the last week or so. You know, it's certainly, you know, no one is mistaken on whether he's a conservative or a moderate.
Let me just stop you there. We have to take a short break. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Taking a look at the midterms and looking ahead, what does it mean for GOP control of the White House, both houses of Congress? My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. A big win for President George W. Bush in an election that he wasn't even running in last night. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. Your sense of the midterms, what it means for this country for the next 2 years with us on the program today, Stan Greenberg, Democratic pollster, John McHenry, GOP pollster, and our own senior national correspondent, NPR's Linda Wertheimer. Let's go right back to the calls to Madison, Wisconsin, and Mike's with us. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
What do you think?
Well, I think I know why this happened. I think it's because Republicans are more likely to vote than Democrats.
Why do you say that?
Well, I think the Republicans have certain issues that they've really mastered the political process by taking on certain issues that people get passionate about really easily, like taxes. If they lower taxes, people with money get a direct, you know, financial benefit from that. Whereas Democrats can say, well, we'll make social programs that might help you, and that's more of an indirect help. And there's stuff like insecurity, fear and insecurity. They promise to be tough on crime or strengthen the military, and that plays on people's fears of being attacked or losing the stuff that they've got.
Are you a Democrat, Mike?
Yes.
How did you vote?
I voted Democrat for the most part.
Not with a lot of enthusiasm, it sounds.
Well,
I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's the problem, right? That you're saying that there weren't the issues that you would have liked to just nail on the ballot and talk up.
But I think that the things that the Democrats stand for are less likely to get fanatics out there. I think that the Republicans have a definite base of people who vote no matter what. They'll go out and vote, and they're very conscious of voting, whereas the issues that Democrats are for benefit a group of people who aren't as clear about what's going on or aren't as passionate about or absolute about what benefits them and what doesn't.
Stan Greenberg?
Well, your call is right. In fact, there is a tendency overall for Republicans to vote in larger proportion. Some of that is demographic, income and education related, but some of it has to do with hot button issues like abortion and guns, which tends to produce, higher turnout.
We're guessing at this until we have the actual turnout figures, aren't we?
And we will have some NPR data on this subject on Friday.
We'll get it from the radio then.
But the other piece of this is that President Bush was very popular, particularly with Republicans. Republicans voted with great unanimity, very, very high turnout,
right,
in support of him as a, wartime leader. And I think it's a very important piece of this. And then the last piece is Democrats did not make the election about something. They tried to fight it, I believe, in each election by election. But, overall, there needs to be a rationale for why go to the polls. And that's the obligation of political leaders.
John McHenry, are we looking in the results of this election when we learn more about them for any shift in voting patterns? People who would have voted before who aren't, people who voted, who are stuck in the middle going one way or the other. Just your sense of that.
It certainly looks like we could see going through some of the turnouts, particularly in the South, as Linda mentioned earlier. It certainly looks like minority turnout was down a little bit, that Democratic base support was down a little bit for whatever reason. Some people say, it was pouring here in Alabama, South Carolina, Georgia all day yesterday, and that may have suppressed it a little bit. But some of it was just some degree of apathy, it seems like, in Georgia. Those races were pretty much pronounced dead a year ago. And it sure looked like Max Cleland had secured a seat when he voted on final approval for the tax cut. But those races, in the Georgia governor's race, you see a Democrat who spent nearly $20 million to a Republican who spent $1 million. But obviously the party did a much better job at getting its voters to the polls. Some of that may be the hot button issues, but in Georgia there wasn't an overarching hot button issue that seemed to bring people to the polls. In South Carolina, Alexander certainly tried to make Social Security an emotional hot-button issue. And that's one of the Democrats' sort of core emotional issues to go to. But Lindsey Graham, in one of his nationally televised debates with Alexander's, came off as the winner on that issue, that while he may not have had the most popular view on it, he certainly had mastered the subject and knew what he was talking about on the issue.
Yeah, there's a lot more that we have to learn. John McHenry, I want to thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
John
thanks,
McHenry's the GOP pollster partner at Ayers McHenry & Associates. Stan Greenberg, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Stan is a Democratic pollster, chairman and CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. At this very moment, former Vice President Walter Mondale is making his concession speech, speaking to supporters in Minnesota, saying in effect that he has no regrets.
And I want to say a word to the young people who gave their full hearts to this campaign and are now seeing defeat. It's important for you to know that your ideals are often tested more in defeat than in victory. To know that this is not the end, but the beginning of what you can do for this state. You will be needed now more than ever. You are our future, and you're the trustees of the legacy of social justice and decency. Stand up and keep fighting.
Just moments ago, former Vice President Walter Mondale speaking to supporters, conceding defeat to the Republican Norm Coleman in the race for the Senate seat there. And Linda, something more than just a message there about Minnesota, something from a senior statesman to, you know, that core of, or that group of Democrats who are going to have to replace the people who are running the show right now.
Absolutely. And I think it's an interesting piece of symbolism that we're looking at a Democrat of the last generation who stepped in at the very last minute. This is a man who has more than his share, has had a great many victories in the state of Minnesota, but he has also had his share of heartbreaking losses running nationally. So I think that is an interesting question. It's something that is, bothered me for a long time. Why is it that that one generation of people grows up eager to vote, can't wait to get to the polling place for the first time, and another generation of people grows up thinking that the whole thing is just nonsense? I worry about that, and I don't have any idea what to do about it. But I think as we look ahead to the next campaign, which is, you know, upon us at this moment, the 2004 election, I think that what has to happen is that that the Democrats have to come up with somebody who can energize young people and old people and all kinds of people in the same way that George Bush has, because George Bush, I think, acquitted himself so well in this election that barring any kind of serious mistakes or something going horribly wrong if he goes to war with Iraq or terror acts repeating and in the United States. I mean, all kinds of things are possible, of course, but this morning, the morning after this election, I think what we are looking at is the very strong possibility that we will reelect our president.
I want to just ask you one other question about what we're listening to with Vice President Mondale, because, you know, 4 years from now, 18 years from now, people will look back on the midterm, and I strongly suspect that they'll point to that particular race as an example of just the capriciousness of politics, that after the death of Senator Wellstone, with the welling up of sympathy and support for the party, and how quickly that was squandered by a few people just standing up and booing the wrong people at the wrong time. Do you know what I mean about that race?
Yeah, it was an extraordinary thing, and I think people who were at that ceremony, the memorial service, which was held in a sports stadium in the Twin Cities, I think people who were there got a kind of sinking feeling when it was happening that, oh dear, this is the wrong thing to be doing. And you're right, there is just the chance that people take when they present themselves to an entire state. Even that, I mean, just the sort of ordinary thing of standing for election, it seems to me is something that is amazing and frightening, and I can't imagine how people have the nerve to do it. And it is. It is a capricious process. The smallest thing can go wrong and just turn an election into some kind of, you turn a campaign into knots. You look at the campaign of Bill Bradley, for example, a candidate who on paper looked wonderful and who just somehow couldn't communicate with voters. We've seen it happen over and over again, and I think it's a fascinating process, but it is a frightening one.
Let's take another call to Raleigh, North Carolina. Roger's on the line. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I think that the Democrats failed to provide a hopeful, unified alternative to the Bush kind of drive for this oil war. And, you know, if they'd been...
Well, what would it have been, Roger? That point was made earlier in the program. What would it have been?
Well, I think it would have been to work internationally to invest more like in a New Deal, maybe to for America to use our resolve, use those billions to create jobs and lead the world into the post-fossil fuel era. You know, we've been doing our own polling on the streets, and I was both in Raleigh here, both in the conservative parts at busy intersections with other peace patriots, and then also down in the African-American south side of the city. At busy intersections, we had simple signs, honk for peace. the majority of people in both the conservative and the more liberal areas were honking. Then last night I was standing there in the rain with our, you know, peace parasols and with the vote peace sign. Mm-hmm. But now with the majority of people there were probably would also honk, but then they'd ask, who do we vote peace for? Do we vote for Erskine Bowles? Do we I think Senator Edwards is to blame, and that his candidacy ought to be sunk.
Let me ask you something. Linda was just making the point here that in the details of the results of this vote, we may see the re-election of President Bush. Do you think that obviously the next 2 years are going to be crucial. That's a silly question. But the way that the war dominates the news and his presidency over the next 2 years, is that what's going to bring it back to the honk for peace sense of citizens' involvement?
Well, I think it has to be. And if the Democrats are smart, they'll turn around on that. But this was not a pro-war, pro-attack Iraq referendum, because nobody ever challenged Bush on that. They didn't even challenge it at the level of this is bad military strategy.
Okay, Roger, I want to thank you for your call. Linda, what happens in Baghdad in the next 6 months is going to be crucial here.
Well, one of the things I think that that this election tells us is that if the president wants a war with Saddam Hussein, that there is almost nothing standing in his way now. He'll have it. He had support from the Congress before, from the Democrats not enthusiastically, but the majority of the House and Senate. And now with the Republicans in control, it happens. And of course, as you point out, all kinds of things could go wrong. But one of and the president, of course, may be running a big bluff, and we may never actually go to war. But
he's backed off a couple of times in the last few months from being that sort of chest out unilateralist, and now the UN resolution is back on the table. It seems quite certain that's going to pass, perhaps as early as today or tomorrow, with the reservations out there. Are we going to see the president resume that sense that we've seen before?
You know, I have no idea what the president's going to do, except that whatever it is that he decides to do, I think he will feel, and I think he would rightly feel, that he has permission. He should go. He should do it. The American people have said to him, "You are our leader, and we are following you." So I think whatever it is that George Bush hopes and plans for Iraq is happening.
Linda, thanks as ever for your insight.
Thank you very much.
Linda Wertheimer, NPR senior national correspondent. Earlier in the program, we talked with Stan Greenberg, Democratic pollster, and John McHenry, GOP pollster. Connection listeners, feel free to continue the conversation. We have forums at our website. We're at theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugars. Our interns are Carter Holler and Meredith Levinson. Graham Smith is our senior producer. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBUR. Up next in the second hour of The Connection with Dick Gordon.